This is Politico Energy. Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron.
The Business Roundtable is a collection of CEOs from some of the largest, most profitable companies in the United States.
I'm Jeff Bezos.
And what is your claim to fame?
I'm the founder of Amazon.com.
Julie has been, since 2015, the CEO of Accenture North America.
Best Buy CEO Corey Barry.
This is a difference than the Chamber of Commerce, which represents the entire companies. These are the CEOs. So they're corporate America. These are the guys and gals running the, you know, biggest companies on Wall Street.
In Wednesday, the Business Roundtable said it's endorsing a market-based climate policy, whatever that means.
It could mean a price on carbon. It could mean cap and trade. It could mean something more complicated than that. But what it really means is CEOs are saying we need to combat climate change with some sort of mechanism. And I think the bottom line here is the vague language is intentional.
Today, Zach Coleman on why the group is coming out in support of climate change policy and why now. It's Thursday, September 17th, and I'm Kelsey Tamburino. The Business Roundtable made the announcement Wednesday morning, but what else did they announce?
Yeah, they announced that they're going to shoot for an 80% reduction of emissions below 2005 levels by 2050, and they want any sort of revenues from a price on carbon to address social issues, environmental issues, things like that. So, you know, this 80% reduction below 2005 levels by 2050, keep in mind, that is pretty much in line with the Waxman-Markey targets of more than a decade ago. And it's also falling short of where scientists say we need to be headed by mid-century.
You mentioned Waxman-Markey. Can you remind listeners what that bill was and how the business community responded at the time?
So Waxman-Markey was cap and trade legislation.
There is a problem of global warming. It's having an impact, and that we need to try to reduce it by the amounts that they think we need to achieve in order to avoid some of the consequences.
There's no question that even with all that said and done, that if there's a cap and trade system put in place and a low carbon economy is created, that would be the best marketplace incentive for the utility industry to move back towards the nuclear industry.
This was the idea that you would set a level of emissions that could not be exceeded nationally, and then you would basically create credits to trade amongst emitters. So as the cap on emissions got tighter, those credits would become more expensive.
It provides assistance to businesses and families as they make the gradual transition to clean energy technologies, so that in a decade, the price to the average American will be about the same as a postage stamp per day.
Now that passed in the House, didn't pass in the Senate, even though Democrats controlled the Senate. Keep in mind, this was the beginning of the Obama administration. There was a lot of enthusiasm, and climate legislation was one of the first things out of the gate. But it was also coming at the same time as Obamacare, and a lot of political capital was expended on getting the Affordable Care Act across the finish line.
So, Zach, it's been more than 10 years since Waxman-Markey failed and climate change policy has gone through quite a ride in that time. Has this been necessarily the best road for these companies?
I think you would say a decade ago, some of these companies at best were standing on the outside, not weighing in. But certainly a lot of the energy companies that are part of the Business Roundtable were trying to change the shape and form of Waxman-Markey and even were pushing against it. If you would have asked many CEOs in the energy space, you know, in the last decade, whether they would have rather had the Obama regulations that they got on climate change or the Waxman-Markey cap and trade legislation, they probably would tell you they would have rather had Waxman-Markey. It would have created some predictability. It would have been something somewhat familiar. And now we've had more than a decade of this kind of regulatory back and forth that has made it really hard for a lot of businesses to plan their operations and know where policy is heading.
What about the timing of this? This goes against the Trump administration a bit, but How would a potential Biden administration look at this issue?
I think what you see here is some positioning by the corporate community for a potential Biden administration. They obviously don't want to see top-down regulations and, you know, a massive government interference in energy markets. So I think that by trying to create some free market approach, they are saying, look, we're in on this issue. We get it. We don't agree with how the progressive left is going to proceed with this. Let's come up with a compromise.
Also, after a long summer hiatus, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is finally coming back, likely in a big way. In today's open meeting, FERC is expected to make some big rulings, including whether energy markets have to allow aggregated distributed energy resources, like rooftop solar, to bid into their markets. At the meeting, the commission is also expected to shine a light on how it will cope with the DC Circuit's rejection of its use of delays to push off making rehearing decisions, delays that kept case participants from going to court. And lastly, FERC is also supposed to tackle how it's going to implement the president's executive order on keeping the bulk power grid safe from cyber intrusions. The order calls for a full review of equipment on the grid in order to protect it from threats from foreign adversaries.
I'm very pleased to have both of you all, Democrat and Republican, before the committee, and that's the way it really should be to get a five-member committee back.
Coincidentally, yesterday, the Senate's Energy and Natural Resources Committee heard from the two FERC nominees hoping to fill the remaining vacancies at FERC. At their first confirmation hearing, Allison Clements and Mark Christie avoided specific answers to regulation questions as to not prejudge any situations they might come across if they are confirmed. Clements, a former lawyer for the Natural Resources Defense Council, did speak about the need to ensure reliability.
In order to ensure that FERC's meeting its obligations and protecting U.S. citizens going forward, what are the right, most efficient, effective investments that the system needs to make?
While Christie, who is currently the chairman of the Virginia State Corporation Commission, spoke about the agency's role in keeping sure states can provide energy even as they transition to renewables.
Americans expect electric power on a 24/7, 365 basis. They don't want hours or days where there's no power. So that's what Americans expect. It's essential to modern life.
If both are confirmed, the commission's board would be fully staffed for the first time in years. Subscribe to Politico Energy wherever you listen and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want more energy news in your inbox, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. Thanks, and we'll be back again tomorrow.
Chevron has spent over $1 billion building one of the largest integrated carbon capture and storage facilities, capable of capturing up to 4 million tons a year. Learn more at chevron.com/possibilities.